one into the night, deep into right, way out of here.
Swung on,
did it,
crushed, and the Phillies are going to lead it.
Harper, the swing of his life.
The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, struck him out.
From WHYY, it is hitting season. Hey there, podcast pals. I'm John Stolness from The Good Fight. You can follow me on X and Blue Sky at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to recap Phil's Guardians and take a look at a big week ahead for the Phillies, a week that I think will help us determine whether or not this team is really for real or not. Three games against the Padres in San Diego, three against the Dodgers in LA, and then three back at home against the Padres. We'll tackle that coming up. But really going to dive into this Cleveland series and take a look at a fantastic weekend of pitching and a horrific weekend of hitting. What is going on with the offense? And on the other side of that coin, what is going on with the pitching? You hear my tone and inflection there? Said the same words, essentially. Two very different thoughts we're going to convey with regard to all that. So we're going to discuss that on the roundtable here. A smaller roundtable. Justin Clue is off today. So Liz Rocher and I will be holding down the fort. Liz, of course, is the editor of Sabres Baseball Research Journal. You can follow her on X and Blue Sky at Liz Rocher. Liz, how are you feeling? Happy Memorial Day to you.
Happy Memorial Day to you as well, John.
And to our listeners and viewers.
And everybody.
Yes.
I hope everyone's enjoying their day off if they get one. I hope where you are, it's nicer than it is here. It's gray and kind of gross and a little cool.
Yeah. Everyone, the East Coast entirely.
Everyone every year is like, where is spring? We don't have spring. I'm like, this year we've had spring. You know what spring is? Temperatures in the upper 50s and lower 60s. Lots of rain and stuff like that. That is spring. So
in the Northeast, that is spring. Yeah. Wet.
It is kind of nice to have it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, last week we had like 3 days sunny in the 90s, where it got up to like 95, 97 here in Northern Virginia. So it was, I enjoyed some cloudy and rainy in the 50s for a couple of days. But I would like to see the bright orange orb one more time. I'm ready for it now. So we'll see. That might not happen for another few days, but amazing that the Phillies were able to get this series in this weekend against the Guardians at all.
I was shocked. I really didn't. I mean, at least the weather where I am was just raining all the time. And I thought, how are they going to do this? But the rain was different up in Philly. So it was nice to see they got all the games in, because that would have been, thus far, they haven't had to do that. They haven't had to like totally bang a game and have to reschedule it. So fewer times they have to do that, the better.
Well, they would have been willing to play through a pretty steady rain just because the Guardians aren't coming back to town. I mean, that's a once a season visit, and it would have been a nightmare trying to reschedule a game. So my guess is that they would have played those games even if they took 7 actual hours to complete in order to get all that done and dance between the raindrops. But they didn't have to do that. They actually got all 3 games in. Unfortunately for the Phillies, they lost their second straight series under Don Mattingly. They've fallen to 26-27 now on the season. Now, they're in a much better position than they were 8 series ago when Don Mattingly took over. But they've lost 4 of 5 here against some better competition. It's not a coincidence that they've lost 2 straight series against a team like the Reds and a team like the Guardians, who I don't think are great teams, but certainly better than the teams that they were playing during their red-hot winning streak. And so they remain 10 games behind the Atlanta Braves in the National League East. I think visions of the division should no longer be dancing in anyone's heads. I mean, I can't imagine there's going to be a scenario where the Phillies get close enough to really challenge that this year, especially since they don't play the Braves again until I think August head-to-head, which just stinks. The schedule makers, I hate this balance.
Terrible job.
The balanced schedule. It's not even the schedule makers. They should be playing teams in their own division more than every team. But because now every schedule is going to be balanced because their difficulty in schedule is harder than ours. So everybody's got to play all of the American League teams and all the National League teams the same because it's going to be the same. No, I hate that. Hate it.
I'm not a huge fan. Like the way it was a couple of years ago where they played more teams, more American League teams, but they still had like a decent number of in-division games. Like I don't understand getting rid of in-division games. If you're just going to get rid of those, just get rid of division. Just make it 2 leagues again.
Yeah. That's a great point because the reason they got rid of them
is already doing it.
Yeah. Well, that's right. And the reason they got rid of the games is because the division games is because the wild card with the 3 wild cards, it kind of rendered winning the division far less important than it ever was. And so I think a lot of teams were complaining about having to play so many games within their own division if you were in a tough division, as opposed to like playing games against central division teams, which now we kind of look at that and laugh because the central divisions are actually some of the stronger divisions in baseball right now. But it's because of the wild cards, people just kind of felt like the National League is competing with itself. Like, you're not trying to win your division anymore. You're just trying to get one of six spots in the National League playoffs. And that's your idea of eliminating the divisions entirely. That's where the merit of that argument comes in. I don't like that idea. I don't want to do that. But if we're going to really de-emphasize winning the division and playing divisional opponents, it really doesn't make a whole lot of sense to have, you know, a system where you need where you win your division and you're in. Maybe you just take the top six teams and go to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's where we're headed, but it feels like that's where they want us to go with all this. I don't know if they know that that's where they're going, but it feels like it's definitely like this is what they're going towards again. And I guess purists will be into it, but I definitely am not quite.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and speaking of the wild card, even though the Phillies are 10 games behind the Braves, they are 3.5 games out of a wild card spot. So, again, still very much alive in things here in the baseball universe as we're here, as we're speaking on May 25th. As far as this weekend against the Guardians, terrific pitching performance by just about everybody on the staff. Phillies starting pitching had a 0.90 ERA this weekend against Cleveland, a tremendous outing by Christopher Sanchez in the opener, 8 shutout innings. Unfortunately, they lose the game 1-0. Juan Duran gives up a solo home run in the 9th inning, and the Phillies don't put anything across the board. The Phillies win on Saturday 3-0. Zach Wheeler, 6 shutout innings for him as he continues to amaze coming off his thoracic outlet syndrome injury surgery. And then on Sunday, hey, great start from rookie Andrew Painter, who has really been solid in his last few starts. He pitched the furthest into a game he has in his career, pitched into the 7th inning, 6 2/3, longest outing of his career, 6 hits and just 2 runs in that game. Unfortunately, the Phillies, again, offensively couldn't do anything off of left-handed starter Parker Messick and lost 3-1. But the pitching, Liz, was just unreal. A 0.90 ERA, like I said, with the starting rotation. Christopher Sanchez, Zach Wheeler throwing up nothing but zeros, and then Andrew Painter coming through with kind of a big start on Sunday. He certainly pitched well enough to try and get them the win. You know, I think there's an argument to be made that each of these starts was the most impressive. You know, Christopher Sanchez, of course, stretched his scoreless inning streak to 37 2/3 innings. If he pitches 4 shutout innings in his next start, he will surpass Grover Cleveland Alexander for the longest scoreless inning streak of any Phillies pitcher in franchise history.
So you have that.
Yeah, really, really cool. Zach Wheeler doing what he's doing. Coming off of the injury, I think just blowing everybody away with you know, our expectations of what we were thinking he would be able to do when he came back. And then Painter, who struggled really badly in his first month and a half of the season, really coming on and putting together his best start so far. If he can provide stability at the back of the rotation, man, what a boon that would be. So I want to ask you first, for you, what was the most, I'll say, important what was the most important start of the weekend in terms of these three pitchers?
Oh, you're making me choose, and I don't like that. I don't like it, John.
That's what a podcast host does, baby.
Boo. because they're all, like you said, they're good arguments for each of them. I'm really torn. I don't, because all three of them deserve it. I'll say Andrew Painter. I'll take the least likely and say Andrew Painter. It was good to see him continue doing well. It was good to see him make it through a lineup that, despite, you know, his colleagues doing well, was pretty scary. And he acquitted himself quite well. I was really happy to see it. And I think it will do a lot for his confidence going forward, and it'll do a lot for the Phillies' confidence in him going forward. You know, giving him a little bit more time to figure things out on the mound. That's how a pitcher grows. A pitcher as young as Pater grows as a major leaguer. And so I love how they're handling him, and I love how he's doing. He seems to be sort of responding well to everything that they're trying to help him do.
Yeah, I think I agree with you. That would have been my selection as well. And I think it's because you're pinning so many of your hopes for the future on Andrew Painter. So it's not just a 2026 thing. Is you want to see progress from a guy who was one of the best, if not some, I think, outlets at one point had him as the best pitching prospect in baseball, certainly the best right-handed pitching prospect in baseball. And the bloom came off the rose last year in AAA somewhat, and that's fair. And he wasn't able to get anybody out at Lehigh Valley a season ago coming off the injury, but that's what everybody chalked it up to. Coming off Tommy John, the command is always the first thing, the last thing to come back. He just didn't have that same sharpness on his location like he had. The electricity from his stuff was gone a little bit. And I think at the start of the year here, we saw that too. He just didn't have great command. He hasn't been generating, even in the two previous starts before this one, a ton of swing and miss. I mean, he's been getting good, you know, contact, ground balls, and he's been getting outs that way, but hasn't really been missing a lot of bats. In this last start, he was missing more bats, and I think that was good to see, especially with his fastball, was seemed to be a little bit more electric. So the hope was that as Andrew Painter pitched here in the big leagues this year, that we would start to see some of that stuff come back. And maybe that's starting to happen now here as we're getting into late May, pitching deeper into games. This is part of the process. They pulled him after six innings in his last time out, but he was only at around like 70 or 80 pitches. Like, he could have gone deeper. I think Don Mattingly and the coaching staff on the pitching side, they've wanted to take it easy on him. Understanding, of course, like, you know, we're trying to gradually build him up innings wise, you know, save some bullets for later in the season. He gave you six innings. Great. No need to push him at this point, which I don't disagree with that. I think that's fine. So maybe that's part of that. I think that's why this is so encouraging, is seeing him pitch a little deeper into a game. They gave him that opportunity and he took advantage of it. And overall, the results have been very good these last three starts, which has been extremely important. Like, you can have Zach Wheeler and Christopher Sanchez at the top of the rotation doing their thing, and they almost certainly give you a great chance to win every time they're back-to-back with each other. But Jesus Luzardo's a little bit of a wild card. Aaron Nola is completely undependable. Independable? Undependable? I don't know. We'll let's play with both of them here. Yeah, it's one of them. So with Andrew Painter, if he can solidify the back of the rotation, well, that solves some problems for you. It lengthens your rotation for one thing, but it also means maybe looking for another starting pitcher who maybe has more of an impact. Maybe you don't need that quite as much in a month or so when you really start thinking seriously about making upgrades to the roster to compete for a wild card spot. So I agree. Let's not lose Christopher Sanchez's start. Let's not lose what Zach Wheeler did. Right now, they are every bit as good as the Roy Halladay, Cliff Lee duo at the top of the rotation in 2011. But
so good.
Yeah. But in terms of like importance for the team and encouraging long term, I think it's Andrew Painter. I agree with you on that. Yeah. Now, that being said, Liz, what we are seeing from Sanchez and Wheeler right now is unprecedented. Yes. In May, listen to the combined numbers. 64 and two-thirds innings, 66 strikeouts, 7 walks, 5 earned runs in 64 and two-thirds innings, a 0.70 ERA combined for the top two pitchers in this rotation. Christopher Sanchez is, I'll be impressed if voters can find another pitcher to name National League Pitcher of the Month for May if it's not Christopher Sanchez.
Seriously.
He hasn't given up a run this month.
Yep, no runs. No runs at all.
A 31% strikeout rate, a 2.5% walk rate. There's no one throw. Is there anyone throwing better in Major League Baseball right now? And let's ask the question. Is he the best pitcher in baseball right now, right this minute?
At this very moment, yes. He's 100% the best pitcher in baseball. When Zach Wheeler was pitching, the Phillies put a punishing on Paul Skeens. And no one's done that to Christopher Sanchez yet, at least in the month of May.
Yeah.
So he's already better than Paul Skeens, which is like the only pitcher anybody wants to compare anyone else with these days.
Right.
So to me, if he's better than Paul Skeens, I think he's the best pitcher in baseball.
I think so Buster Olney had a tweet, and I wish I could find it now, but he was noting how loaded this National League Cy Young race is. Right now, I mean, you do have Paul Skeens, but I'm just trying to go off the top of my head here. You've got like Kyle Harrison. We saw Chase Burns come through. They all have Shohei Ohtani is pitching at an incredible level right now. You do have Skeens. There are so many outstanding pitching performances in the National League. It's going to be difficult for Sanchez to kind of rise above them, but because he finished second last year, his profile is already raised, so that's a good thing. He's not catching anyone by surprise, and I think there's something to it when you are able to prove that, yes, the previous season wasn't a fluke, right? This is who you are. I think the writers look at him and say, you know, last year it was kind of like, is he really this good? Like, this is incredible. Like, is he really this good? Now you're getting confirmation he really is this good. And I think that would encourage people to look to him as a Cy Young winner rather than like an upstart, because it's hard to believe, but it's getting better. Like, he's getting better.
And I wouldn't be surprised if they considered Christopher Sanchez sort of an upstart. He doesn't have that pedigree that, you know, Paul Skeens has, you know, all of the word of mouth behind him, all that. Like, Sanchez came out of nowhere, not just for everyone else, for the Phillies, too, for Phillies fans. Like, no one knew that he would go from quad A to, you know, A pitcher, like the A, B, C, D, the A pitcher, the number one pitcher for the Phillies. Like, we were all pretty reluctant to even give Zach Wheeler that title above Aaron Nola when he got here and was pitching like crazy. It took us a while to get there, but now we sort of see, like, Sanchez is incredible.
Yeah.
And I think I always feel like Ohtani is like the ghost, and because he bats, I feel like a lot of writers have a hard time separating his effect on the team in one area or another area. But you can't argue right now Sanchez is a better pitcher than Ohtani. If you look at pitcher war on BREF, he's above him by over a full win.
Yeah.
More than a win and a half. Like, that's a big deal. And I mean, if you look at Skeens and Ohtani as like the two National League sort of standard bearers, like, he's doing better than both of them.
I'm looking at, and so in terms of Fangraphs wins above replacement, he's also bettering Ohtani right now. Although
he's also pitched the most innings in MLB.
Yeah, that's important. That shouldn't be lost on anybody here.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, but I'm kind of curious. Like, I'm not seeing Ohtani among like the National League leaderboards on Fangraphs. I'm trying to see why they don't have him on here. Like, Christopher Sanchez has a 2.8 WAR, which is far and away the best in the National League. Jacob Mizorowski of Milwaukee is second at 2.2. He's got a 1.89 ERA. Sanchez is 1.62. Mizorowski is also having an unbelievable season. You've got Skeens at 1.6, but his ERA is 3 right now, so I don't think anyone considers him a leading contender. You've got Miami's Max Meyer has a 2.52 ERA and 1.6 WAR. Chase Burns, like I mentioned, we saw him last week, and he looked really good. A 1.89 ERA for him in 10 starts. Chris Sale has a 1.89 ERA in 10 starts. I mean, Bryce Elder, of all people, a 1.97 ERA so far in 11 starts for him. So, I mean, and that doesn't even count guys like, you know, Shota Imanaga, Yoshinobu Yamamoto. And yeah, I mean, I think I'm trying to find the Ohtani numbers because maybe he hasn't pitched enough innings to qualify. Yeah, let me see. I'm trying to find out where his pitching stats would be.
I mean, he's not on any of the baseball reference leaderboards except for WAR for pitchers. And I'm going to guess that's because his stats just aren't on there. I mean, he hasn't pitched enough innings to be on the leaderboard, so he definitely has pitched under 64.
Yeah, I think so. That must be it. He's at 49 innings this year, so
okay.
I guess that's why he has. And Zach Wheeler doesn't show up on any of the leaderboards either, because he's still underneath the qualifications. So but you've got to count Wheeler as well, because, hey, Zach Wheeler has a 1.67 ERA on the season in 37 and two thirds innings. So he's pitched about the same amount of innings as Shohei Ohtani, just a hair less right now. But at some point, both of those guys will catch up. And they will become qualified starters. And so you're going to have to consider them too. So it's a fascinating conversation. Sanchez and Wheeler, in the mix for Cy Young. We're still a long ways away from the end of the regular season. But, I don't know, Liz. I think by the fifth inning, in San Diego, I guess he's going to pitch the second game of the series. I expect Christopher Sanchez has a really great shot at becoming the Phillies' all time leader in consecutive shutout innings. Now, how many did Oral Hershiser have? 59 and a third. You remember that? Oral Hershiser.
Yeah.
That was an insane run. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was wild.
That was a lot. So, but Liz, as great as the pitching was in Cincinnati,
I wanted to start off talking about
something fun. Now let's look at the aspect of the team that, again, not doing it all well. The offense is really struggling. In the series, they went one hit 185 in the series, 17 for 92. They scored just four runs in the series. They struck out 31 times. They went 1 for 17 with runners in scoring position in this three-game series. They left 21 runners on base and did not hit a home run in the series. They are now 4-12 on the season against lefty non-opening starters. And that's really where a lot of the focus is right now with this team. It's the right-handed hitters, specifically against the left-handed starters. Scott Lauber had this note in an article he wrote after the game on Sunday. Turner, Bohm, Realmuto, Adolis Garcia, and Edmundo Sosa went 1-for-13 with five strikeouts against Parker Messick, who is a good left-handed pitcher, but they went 1-for-13 with five strikeouts against Messick on Sunday. The lefties, Schwarber, Harper, Stott, and Marsh went 4-for-9. With one strikeout. So it's not as if you can't hit Parker Messick. I mean, it's just what we're seeing. And this is not new. That's the thing. Is versus left-handed pitching, it's been a struggle all season. Trey Turner has a 206 average against lefties with a 601 OPS. Yes, Alec Bohm is a 232 average with a 779 OPS. That's a little bit better against lefties. Still not great. Mm-hmm. JT Realmuto, a 188 average against left-handers with a 423 OPS. And Adolis Garcia, a 250 batting average with a 779 OPS against right-handers. Changeups are killing the Phillies right-handed hitters right now from lefties. They're just, oh my gosh. Adolis Garcia has just struggled in general. He was in a 1-for-38 slump on Sunday before he finally got a double in the fourth inning, Liz.
I love him, though.
What did you make of comments from Trey Turner? It's depressing. What Trey Turner said, he thinks the issues with lefties is just more of a coincidence than anything, really. Reading all of those numbers, hearing all of those numbers, do you buy that?
No.
No.
Coincidence. All of those hitters not hitting against a lefty, that's not a coincidence. That's... I don't know. What is that? It's just life. It's normal. It's what happens. Like, that's not a coincidence of any kind. This is what happens sometimes when the Phillies hitters face a certain type of pitcher.
Yeah. I mean, last year they did not have this issue with left-handers in particular. Now, Schwarber was hitting left-handers at a ridiculous rate last year. A lot of their numbers came from Kyle Schwarber owning left-handers, which was a bizarre turn of events. But, you know, historically, Bohm has hit well against lefties. Realmuto has hit well against lefties. Adolis Garcia has never had great splits against left-handers. So thinking that was going to cure the problem was one of the reasons I didn't love the signing this offseason. But, you know, Trey Turner, especially, I think, and if this is Trey's point, still no feather in your cap, bud. But maybe what he's pointing to is the fact that he's stuck in an 8-for-49 funk overall after going 0-for-4 on Sunday. He's not hitting anybody. It doesn't matter if it's left-handers or right-handers. Adolis Garcia isn't hitting anybody, left-handers or right-handers. Realmuto isn't hitting anybody. So, yes, I guess You know, if you're just struggling overall, the numbers against left-handers are going to look bad because you're just struggling. You're not doing anything, but you're supposed to feast on left-handed pitching if you're a right-handed hitter, and to help get you out of slumps. Like, that's what's supposed to be the slump breaker. And it's like left-handers are just holding their heads underwater, you know, trying to drown them. It's really, I don't know what to make of this. I mean, I don't know what turns it around, Liz.
I mean, me either. It's sort of like that year when the Phillies, was that last year? They literally could not hit fastballs. Like the one pitch that you hit all the time, they could not do it right. And again, this team, whether it's just its nature, I don't even think it's how it's built. I just think it's part of the organization. They just tend to get into cycles together. And I don't think that's a coincidence. I just think they just do. When one of them stops hitting fastballs, they all sort of get on board with it. When they all are having trouble against lefties, or when one is having trouble, everybody has trouble. What I find amusing is that Brandon Marsh is fine.
Yeah.
Brandon Marsh is fine. There's been no more talk about
all of a sudden.
Yep. I mean, I couldn't be more thrilled that he's continuing to do well, and to see him on a list of guys who did well against lefties, even over one series, is really great. I did look up, after you mentioned Kyle Schwarber and his luck against lefties last year, I looked up his platoon splits for this year. Is that this year's is 26? Yes. Yeah. He's still doing better against lefties. He's a 254. I mean, just batting average, but looking at, he's got a 254 batting average over 210 on lefties, 210 on righties. It's just interesting that, because I figured it might stop because it seemed so weird and out of the blue. I figured maybe it's just a one season thing. When he gets a little bit of time off, he'll kind of revert. But nope, it seems like he's continuing to do well. He has about a little over half of the plate appearances and against righties, but I'm still encouraged to see him doing well against lefties.
Yeah, last year there was a point where he was hitting well over 300 against them, and then that number came down, which you would expect because he couldn't keep up that clip all season. But yeah, 256 for Schwarber against left-handers is absolutely acceptable. And you heck, I'd take those numbers from some of the right-handed hitters right now. But we saw
we saw
over these last six games what happens when Kyle Schwarber isn't there to hit three home runs every series.
Exactly.
He was sick throughout the Cincinnati series and didn't play. Then he came back here against Cleveland and didn't have much of an impact, wasn't able to hit the long ball. Bryce Harper continues to swing the bat well, continues to hit well, but he's really one of the only ones. Justin Crawford got cold. Brandon Marsh is still doing fine, but like it's just, they're not getting enough from their right-handed hitters, and it doesn't matter if it's against lefties or if against righties. Some of these numbers after Sunday's game are pretty awful. Trey Turner, right now among 25 qualified major league shortstops, ranks 19th in wins above replacement. But this is a story we've heard before with Trey Turner. His career in Philadelphia has, I think, more of the time than not been underwhelming. He had a good season last year, but outside of that, he's had spurts, but the consistency hasn't been there. A 225 average for him on the season with a 281 on base and a 338. I mentioned he's in an 8-for-49 funk right now at the plate. And we had a question pop in from someone on Twitter asking a question about Turner, asking, can we drop Turner in the batting order? This is from @PhillyFan8. It seems like the top of the order is producing nothing, and that's why the team is .500. I think it's a little simplistic, but
yeah,
is it time to drop Trey Turner in the batting order? I don't know that it is, Liz, because I don't know what you do. I don't know who you put there.
Now, who do you put there? That's kind of the problem. You don't have a guy who is like doing well that you can put there right now. And so I think it's just you leave, unless another better solution or option becomes available, you just keep doing what you're doing. You don't have anything better. So that's, even if it sucks, that's the best option at the moment. What are you going to do? Put Justin Crawford there? No.
Well, you can't have three lefties at the top like that. You know, you're not going to go lefty, lefty, lefty to start a game with Harper and Schwarber there. So I you're stuck with Turner. This is why you're paying him. You're stuck with him there. It stinks. I don't see how moving him down. You're going to put Bohm at the top of the order? That's not going to work. And, you know, certainly none of the other right-handed hitters are worth moving up and putting in that spot. So you're stuck. You're stuck with Trey Turner at the top of the order, and he's got to figure it out. And that's kind of my point, is that there's not going to be a big name that can fix everything. Like, I think at the trade deadline, they're going to have to go out and get some kind of right-handed help, but there's not going to be a... Maybe I'll mention a name in just a second. But let me... Adolis Garcia. In terms of outfielders, Liz, 52nd out of 60 qualified outfielders in wins above replacement. By the way, Justin Crawford is 53rd. So your center fielder and your right fielder rank 52nd and 53rd in outfielders' wins above replacement. Adolis Garcia hitting .203 on the season with a .288 on base and a .319 slugging percentage from him. Another Twitter question from @MorganBruce asked, what sort of leash do you give Adolis Garcia when the process is clearly there, seems to be hitting the ball hard, and has massively improved from the last 2 years in terms of strikeouts and chase, but the results have lagged so far behind? And if you look at Adolis' baseball savant page, Liz, it looks like he's doing some things better this year. Like, he's not chasing. He's not as wild out of the strike zone. But yet the strikeouts keep piling up. He's missing pitches in the zone. And when he does hit the ball hard, it's on the ground somewhere. And then, and so the numbers are hard to hide behind, you know, as good as the peripherals are. Is he someone like that you know, are ready to bail on? I'm ready to go.
I like it. I am like the one person who did not want them to trade for him, but I like his personality. I like his vibe. I love how hard he tries and how into the game he is all the time. I never see him looking tired. I never see him looking down. He's always there ready to take a base, even if his talent level doesn't want to let him at that moment. He's just always ready, and I really enjoy having him around, even if the rest of the Phillies don't seem to be getting on board. He's like real excited, and the other Phillies are just like kind of not there. And that makes me sad. He's such a fun player and a guy that clearly enjoys the game. And maybe it's better to let him fly free, fly free and find a team that is maybe a little better suited for his wonderful effervescentness. And the Phillies, I think at this point, may not deserve it. They don't deserve his output, I'll say. They deserve a bit better than that. But I wouldn't be ready to give up on him completely. I mean, his results have lagged far behind, but he's doing the right things. You have to hope that at one point something will click. Yeah. But I don't know. With a guy who loves striking out that much, there may not be a balance to get back to. This may just be how it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's looking at the last 2 years before this one and being surprised. Oh, he's repeating it? Of course he is. But you know, I do agree with this Morgan Bruce on Twitter that, you know, some of the peripherals are better for him than the numbers would indicate. But he's just not hitting the ball in the air. That's the problem. Not hitting the ball in the air. Will that come around? Will that turn around? If he does, I think he becomes pretty productive. But he's not hitting the ball in the air, and that just I don't know if that's going to change or not with him. And then you got JT Realmuto, Liz, who missed a lot of time earlier in the season, and now is back. And right now he ranks 20th out of 36 catchers with at least 100 plate appearances in terms of wins above replacement. He's hitting .219 with a .291 on base and a .281 slugging percentage.
Oh my God.
There's nothing coming off his bat. Nothing coming off his bat. A weighted runs created plus of 65, which even at the catching position, which is notorious for being a poor offensive position, he is 35 points underwater in terms of being league average. I mean, that's saying a lot. No, is it 30? Yeah, 35 with a weighted runs created plus of 65. So there's nothing you can do there. I mean, you signed him for another, you know, was it 3 years, right? 3 year contract. Was it a 4 year contract? JT, was it four years?
Want to remember. It can't be 4 years. It's not 4.
I'm pretty sure it was 4 years because I think we were all looking at it. 3 years. 3 years, $45 million. Sorry, everybody. I got overly negative in my own head there for a moment. So I just had to snap myself back. But again, just these right-handers need to hit. And if they don't hit, they're not going to be more than a 500 team. It's just the way it is. The Phillies, as a collective, their right-handed hitters have a .206 batting average this year. That's dead last in baseball.
That's bad. Straight up terrible.
Very, very bad. Straight up terrible. Even in a season when offensive numbers are down, It's the worst. Their .270 on-base percentage is second worst. Their .310 slugging is worse. Their 18 home runs are 23rd. All right, we're looking up. Weighted runs created of 63, second worst. Now, here's the fun stat, Liz. Hard hit percentage, they're seventh. 40.6% hard hit percentage, but their barrel percentage of 4.5% is last. So somehow they're hitting the ball hard, but not barreling them up.
Okay. I mean, there's a lot of positive there.
Yeah.
You know, that these are things that can be fixed. The biggest problem is when you're not hitting the ball hard. When you're not hitting the ball hard, very few things happen. So at least they're hitting the ball hard and they're in the top 30% of MLB in that. And so I think there's room to go. They haven't hit their ceiling. Yeah. There's room to fix a lot of this. They just have to, you know, we just have to wait for him to do it. Just like we had to wait for, just like fans have to wait for everything else, we got to wait for them to do it. Because it's not like we're the only ones that see what's wrong. They clearly know what's wrong, too. And you have to imagine they're trying to fix it. But guys who have been hitting a certain way their entire lives, change doesn't come easy for those guys. So,
yeah. All right. So I'm going to throw a couple of fun questions in quotation marks here for the people who aren't watching the YouTube channel here about the offense. Okay, so we talked about this player a couple weeks ago on the podcast, and we were both adamant that adding this person at the trade deadline, if he were to become available and willing to be moved, wouldn't make a whole lot of sense. On Sunday, Mike Trout hit his 13th home run of the season. Mm-hmm. Mike Trout right now is worth 2.3 wins above replacement. That would be more than any member of the Phillies right now. I think the top is Schwarber at 1.6. Harper's at like 1.5. Marsh is at like 1.5. Trout is at 2.3. Plays center field. He's playing center field right now for the Angels. It's a .239 average. Not great. But a .399 on-base percentage. He has, he has walked 47 times already this season. Getting on base a ton. Has a .489 slugging percentage and an .889 OPS so far this year for Mike Trout. Let's just say that the Angels are certainly going to be trading players. They're going to be sellers at the trade deadline. They have no chance of even getting a wild card in the American League West. So you know, you've already identified them as sellers, and that's a good thing. Let's just say that the prospect package that they want back is reasonable. I don't want to try to throw out names right now. You know, it's too early in the season to try and figure out which prospects are having good seasons, what they're worth, all that kind of stuff. That's for another time. But let's just say that the prospect package is acceptable in terms of what the Angels would get back. And you get Mike Trout. You get him at, he's making, his contract is the same length as Aaron Nola's. All right, it runs through 2030. And he is making $37 million a season every year through 2030. That is his current salary, the extension that he signed with the Angels a while back. So Liz, given his injury history, given the fact that Mike Trout, as I'm looking at his page, has only played more than 130 games, or has played at least 130 games once since 2021, and has reached 100 games only twice since 2021 because of back issues. He's 34 years old, and you would have him through his like age 39 season. Would you swing a trade? Would you try to trade for Mike Trout, given the injury history and his issues with the back and his inability to play? But the fact that he's hitting the ball really well right now, hitting for power, and playing a very good center field, these are clearly things that the Phillies are in desperate need of and have nothing on the farm right now, nothing in the farm system ready to come up and play an outfield in terms of like a right-handed hitter.
So you want me to tell you whether I think this is a good idea?
Yes, I do.
Honestly, I kind of do. You and I were adamant weeks ago that this was a terrible idea, and now I think
talked into it too.
yep, I'm into it too. Yep, this is how you see, listeners and viewers, this is how you see opinions change.
Yeah,
you can hear us and listen to us throughout the last few weeks. I would say, yeah. I mean, I could see the headlines now. The Phillies are doing what they did 10, 15 years ago, which is just adding, getting older willingly.
Oh, but yeah.
That's definitely something that will be everywhere. They're just getting older. They're adding money. And people will say it's throwing, you know, bad money after even more bad money. But I really don't know if like John Middleton would be able to say no. I think he loves the idea of Mike Trout coming home, mm-hmm. if you want to call it that. Like, Jersey's his home, but, yeah. you know, as far as a baseball home, it's L.A. He's been there forever. But I like it. I would like to see it, especially, you know what's weird? Because he doesn't play that many games and he's injured, it's actually not going to be such a big problem.
Yeah.
Like, you have another big guy on there, he's going to be injured a bunch. Don't worry about it. There's going to be enough playing time for everybody.
Wait, his OPS plus of 153 right now is the highest since 2022, when it was 176, and he was worth 6 wins above replacement in 120 games that year, where he was trending to be like an...
His on-base percentage is almost 400. 400!
Yeah, 400.
100.
That is... 100. Is... Yeah,
that's insane. Those are the type of numbers that you want on your team, and yeah. you have to wonder. I wonder if you offer, because I know the Phils are real concerned about money. I wonder if you offer them enough prospects, the Angels would be willing to take on a little bit of salary.
Yeah, yeah. Because I mean, here's what I'll tell you. I was doing kind of like a little bit of a dive into the Phillies farm system. I wrote a story for it about it in the Good Fight on Friday. There's nothing that blows your hair back in there right now. There just isn't. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry. Dante Norris, a fun looking prospect. Arun Escobar looks like a decent, but none of these guys project as all-stars. None of them do. There do not appear to be, I mean, I would have said Aiden Miller, but Aiden Miller can't get on the field because his back is bad. So, I mean, I would find it hard to part with anyone. I mean, I would find it hard to argue with parting with anyone. So, I mean, yeah. I don't know that, and frankly, given that, if the Angels make a trade of Mike Trout, my guess is they're mostly looking for salary relief. Because I don't think...
Oh, I guess you're right, yeah.
I mean, because I don't think the Phillies have anything of real value to offer them in terms of a trade. At least that's my very pessimistic take on their farm system.
But I think you're right, largely.
So
the Phillies are just not a team that develops well. They're not, and I don't think they may never be.
But the problem with the Phillies' right-handed hitters and the need for a right-handed hitting outfielder with real juice is so acute. And this window for a World Series is closing rapidly. And he's probably going to be the only player who has that kind of impact. Like, the Angels might trade Joe Adell. Adell is not having a good season. There are very few teams that have a right-handed hitting player, outfielder, that can make a real impact and dramatically help you. And Mike Trout may not even be available. He's got full 10 and 5 rights. He controls where he wants to go. He may be more than happy to just languish in Los Angeles for the back part of his 30s. And if that's the case, then that's the case.
He was happy to do that for the front part of his 20s, the back part of his 20s, and the front part of his 30s, too.
That's right.
Pretty much every age since he's been in the majors, he has been content languishing with the Angels. And that, you know, I think we talked about it. Maybe it was on Friday when we talked about, Justin and I talked about Jose Ramirez. Mm-hmm. There were just some guys that, you know, money doesn't matter for them. It's all about comfort and where their family is happy. And for him, it seems like it's there. It's Los Angeles. It's with the Angels. And that's the only reason I would see him not coming. Because I can't imagine him saying, I don't want to play with Bryce Harper.
Right.
I do not want to get offense for a pitcher like Christopher Sanchez. Please, please, I hate him. You know, he definitely wants to play with these guys. You know, you can't imagine he wouldn't. But it's such a big life upheaval. It's so easy for us to say, yeah, just trade him. He could be traded. Trade him here.
Yeah.
But there's like a whole, just like a whole universe of a person's universe that gets thrown into disarray. And I would have a hard time blaming Mike Trout if he simply said, I do not want to leave.
Yeah.
Want to go. I have a house here and I like it. I like my house. My kids are here. My kids really like it here. My wife loves it here. Like, this is where our home is. I wouldn't be surprised if they just continued to live there forever, because living near his favorite football team does not seem to be a really big a priority for Mike Trout.
No,
he can fly to see him anytime he wants.
Yeah, right. He can catch a flight. He can take his private charter jet and fly to Philadelphia anytime he wants to watch an Eagles game. And
the
very
Eagles
few people
will
get
send their plane for him.
That's right. That's right. And very few people get tired of summer in January. Like, it's just it's not a lot of people love to make that trade if they don't have to. So
my husband lived in Irvine, California, in Southern California for over a decade, and I remember visiting him and being like, it's like this all the time, like mid-70s, gorgeous. He's like, yeah, we talk about moving back all the time. Never really seriously, but like in the middle of winter when I'm just like, this is the third day in a row I haven't gone outside because it's terrible and cold. That's when you're like, you know, maybe we could afford the cost of living in Greece.
Maybe we could figure it out. Maybe we could figure it out.
I could
never need
jobs.
To put the heater on, you know? So maybe that's what makes it work for us.
Los Angeles, we can walk everywhere.
That's right. All right, so we're both agreed that if Mike Trout agreed to waive his no-trade clause and the prospect package was worth it, we would both pull the trigger on a Mike Trout trade. I agree with you on that. Second question I wanted to ask you. The Washington Nationals have scored the most runs in Major League Baseball so far this year. Did you know that?
I didn't until I saw it on your show sheet and read everything else underneath it. This is fascinating,
this
John.
This is fascinating.
What an interesting idea.
The Phillies are 23rd in runs scored in Major League Baseball. The Nationals are first. The Nationals' 735 team OPS is fourth best in baseball. The Phillies' 682 is 25th. The Nationals' 108 weighted runs created plus as a team is fifth best in baseball. The Phillies' 91 is 26th. The Nationals lead the league in doubles with 105 doubles. The Phillies are 26th at 74. If you're getting the gist of where I'm going here with this, the only offensive stat in which the Phillies and Nationals are close is in home runs. The Phillies have 62 home runs. That's ninth most. The Nationals have 65. That is seventh most. So my question is, would you trade straight up the Nationals' position players for the Phillies' position players? Like you just transplant the offenses, right? Tomorrow, all the Nationals' offensive players have Phillies' jerseys on. And all of the Phillies players go to DC and put Nationals jerseys on. And just to do a quick position by position, first
Bryce
base.
Bryce Harper runs screaming into the night.
Right. right now, Luis Garcia Jr. is playing first base for the Nationals. Obviously, the Phillies have Bryce Harper. Bryson Stott versus Nassim Nunez at second base. Nunez leads the National League with 22 stolen bases, but he also has a 494 OPS. Doesn't seem those two stats are going to continue that way. At third base, you have Alec Bohm versus Brady House. Brady House has a 681 OPS. He's having a better season than Bohm, but it's not great. Shortstop, Trey Turner against CJ Abrams. Abrams is having an MVP-type season in Washington. A 918 OPS, 11 home runs, leads the league in RBIs with 45. Finally playing like a star. In left field, Brandon Marsh versus Dalen Lyle. 1.1 win above replacement, 763 OPS. Pretty comparable. I really like Dalen Lyle. Center field, Justin Crawford against Jacob Young. Jacob Young has a 0.8 wins above replacement and a 658 OPS. Both those numbers better than Justin Crawford right now. Right field, you have Adolis Garcia and James Wood. No comparison. Wood also playing like an MVP. 45 runs, 910 OPS. And then at DH, you have Schwarber versus Jose Tania. Tania has a 704 OPS, 7 doubles, 3 home runs. So then a couple of positions here, Liz, it's very obvious the Phillies have an advantage. And in a couple of positions, the Nationals clearly have an advantage. If you could right now trade the two offenses, would you?
You're making me make decisions again.
While you think about this, the reason I'm asking this is because A, it will either change how you think about the Nationals, which is possible. Mm-hmm. They're at 500, have a one game lead on the Phillies in the East. I think they're playing above their heads right now. The Nationals are.
I strongly agree.
It also will kind of, I think, clarify for you in your heart as a Phillies fan, how you actually think about the Phillies, despite the numbers they're putting up. like, oh, and I forgot about catcher, Keibert Ruiz and JT Realmuto. Right now, Keibert Ruiz is having a better season than JT Realmuto. But, like, if you had to switch all those guys, like, I think it's kind of asking, like, what do you lean on more? Like, do you believe that the Phillies will eventually kind of catch up and their numbers will start to look more like what we're used to seeing and the Nationals numbers will come down? Or do you believe, like, the Phillies are really just not very good anymore? And maybe here's a Nationals team. Like, if you could swap them for this year for 26, you'd do it.
I wouldn't, if only because I think the advantages they have are really important. That, and I love the Phillies and I hate the Nationals. So just to start with, but even taking that out of it, like, Harper and Schwarber are huge. Like, those are big anchors that you need in the lineup. You need both of them. And flipping Schwarber with Jose Tania is just that's so unattractive to me. Mm-hmm. And even Stott and Nassim Nunez. Nunez is a fun player, but my God, he is hitting, what is it? Let me look. 186.
Yeah, he's bad. He's
hitting 186.
Good.
That's a big no. That's a big, big NO from me. I would probably switch up Bowman Turner for their Nationals. I think that's where you get a real advantage there, and probably maybe catcher. I'm not sure I'd switch out Realmuto even with the terrible season he's having. So for me, there's just too many advantages on the Phillies roster, the Phillies hitters, to flip them. I just wish I didn't hate CJ Abrams so much, because I really do hate him. I hate him so much, but he's a very good player. Him and James Woods. That's why I hate them. I hate them because they're actually good and they're on the Nationals, and when we see them, I'm just like, you're on the wrong team.
It's kind of funny. Like, I think the stars all cancel each other out. Like, James Wood and Kyle Schwarber kind of cancel each other out in terms of production. Now, James Wood is an emerging young star. I would trade Kyle Schwarber for James Wood in a nanosecond. Okay, let's not kid ourselves here. CJ Abrams and Bryce Harper kind of cancel each other out right now. Abrams is having a better season than Bryce Harper is, but it's not by much. And Harper's right there, so they kind of cancel each other out. I think Brandon Marsh and Dalen Lyle, they play the same position, and I think, you know, production wise they kind of cancel each other out. Lyle's emerged as probably their third best player in Washington, and then the rest of it is just kind of like, I see these Nationals players playing slightly better than their Phillies counterparts. You know, like, the gap between, let's say, like, Bowman House is, I think at the end of the day, by the end of the season, I expect those two guys to be pretty similar. If not Bowman, maybe a little bit better. Crawford versus Jacob Young. I'm not a Jacob Young fan. I don't think he can hit. I don't know that Crawford can hit either, but I think they kind of are a wash right now, even though Young's got slightly better numbers at the moment, you know? And so I agree with you at catcher. I think I am not at all a big Ruiz fan, Keibert Ruiz fan. But I'm not a big Realmuto fan right now. So at the end of the day, I think I also believe that the Nationals offense is kind of producing more than what I think they're capable of. I think they're playing over their heads just a little bit. But that being said, I've watched a lot of the Nationals living in Northern Virginia, and, you know, my son and my father-in-law are big Nationals fans. They make a lot of hard contact and they hit doubles everywhere. Like, they're always hitting doubles. They seem to not miss pitches over the plate, and I'll give them credit. Like, they've got energy, and they're playing with an energy that this older veteran Phillies team is not really playing with night in and night out. So I would not make the swap either, which I think tells me that I believe in this Phillies offense a little bit more than I would like to admit. And I think that's why I wanted to kind of go through that exercise.
I would agree with you. Like, we're all frustrated with them, but, you know, they had a good, what, 2-3 weeks that were fabulous and we all enjoyed. We know what they could do, and we just have to hope that they'll do more of it.
Yeah.
Do they play the Nationals anytime soon? Because I am not eager to see any of these players.
Yeah, I don't. We really played them earlier, so I'm not sure. I don't have the schedule in front of me. I don't think they do. They haven't been to Washington yet, so it's possible they do. But yeah, that'll be that should be an interesting series. Right now, the Nationals, I think, would. If you throw Sanchez and Wheeler up against that Nationals lineup, they're going to shut those guys down. So I think it just depends on who the Phillies have starting in that series, because the Nationals pitching is brutal. It is an awful pitching staff, although they did well against the Braves this weekend, taking 2 out of 3. They really shut down Atlanta's offense. It's only the second series the Braves have lost all year. So, you know, Nationals fans are at least having a little more fun this year to start off the season. All right, let's finish up looking ahead. This week, the Phillies head out west, Liz, for a 3-game series, starting off in San Diego. And then they'll head to L.A. for a 3-game series against the Dodgers. Then they'll come back home for 3 more against the Padres. Starting off in San Diego, Liz, the Nick Castellanos Revenge Tour begins. The Phillies will take on their former right fielder. Of course, a messy divorce from the Phillies over the course of last year and the winter time. How are you feeling about seeing Nick Castellanos, your guy, Liz? How are you feeling about seeing Nick Castellanos and your guy in a Padres uniform?
I know. I honestly forgot that he was even there.
Yeah,
I forgot he was even there and they'd be facing him. And so, like, as much as I loved him while he was here for personality reasons, I'm not really feeling any particular way. I just kind of want them to win and do well. Even if Nick Castellanos has a great series against them, I just want them to win. Maybe Nick Castellanos gets to feel good for a couple of days. That's fine. If that is like the worst result that I will tolerate.
I will. I agree with you. I kind of forgot about the Nick Castellanos thing, too, until I read it this morning. I was like, oh, we probably need to talk about him because that was a big storyline this offseason. He went to San Diego, a place where he felt like he was going to get a lot of good playing time. But he's a part time player with the Padres as well. So it's not just Philadelphia that was dissing him, taking away playing time. He's just, you know, he's a part time player now. I don't think you've probably seen these numbers. Can you guess for me what his batting average is right now? Take a guess at his batting average.
I'll say 206.
I'm pretty close. A little bit lower than 206. Nick Castellanos is batting a robust 190 so far here on the season with a 577 OPS for the washed Nick Castellanos. But as it so often happens, Reese Hoskins had a couple of hits against the Phillies this weekend with the Guardians, and Mickey Moniak usually drives the Phillies crazy whenever they play him. I would not be at all surprised if Nick Castellanos rears his ugly head in some kind of frustrating and annoying way in this series to hurt the Phillies. But last thing before we go, Liz, 3 in San Diego, 3 in LA, this road trip this week, 6 games. How many games did the Phillies win?
I want to say 4, but I think it'll be 3.
So they go 3-3 probably, on the same road trip.
Yeah. I think they'll probably win. They'll probably win the series against the Padres and lose against the
Dodgers. Yeah. Yeah. And hey, listen, to the Phillies' credit, they have played very well in San Diego and Los Angeles over the last few years. They tend to play their best baseball against the Padres and the Dodgers for whatever reason. But again, this will be a good litmus test for this team. Like, is this team truly better under Don Mattingly, or was the run that we saw under Don Mattingly more of a result of playing teams that were not quite as good as the teams that they were playing before? Like, this is going to be that Braves-Cubs run that we saw a couple weeks ago, and we talked about it on the last roundtable. Is this Phillies team now? We wanted to see this Phillies team under Don Mattingly have another run, you know, at a stretch like the Braves and the Cubs, to really kind of measure them against the really good teams in the National League. And so I'm a little less optimistic. I think they go 2-4. I think they'll lose both series coming up. I think they'll go 2-4 in this 6-game road trip and then come back home against the San Diego Padres for a home series at Citizens Bank Park next week. And, you know, we'll kind of see how things are shaking out after this 6-game West Coast road trip taking place this week. All right, Liz, let's wrap up. Any final thoughts before we go?
Well, as I know we mentioned several weeks ago, that we all three love Waterloo sparkling water. I have just discovered a flavor, a new flavor this week at the grocery store called Banana Berry Bliss.
Ooh, I love banana flavoring. That one.
It's really good. I love banana flavoring, real or fake. I just love it. I always have. And this is like the perfect water for me. It's really good. You should try it. Waterloo, definitely not an official sponsor of Hidden Season.
No, but we are open to it. We're open to it. But no,
we
Waterloo.
We like you on our own. Sponsor. If you pay us to like you, we'll like you even more.
That's right. We will pretend to like all the flavors. I mean, not just the ones we actually like, even the ones that we wouldn't use to quench our thirst in a desert. We will love one of those.
Do you have one of those?
No, not that I know of.
You don't have. You like all the flavors.
I like all the flavors. I don't like lemon lime. I do not like lemon lime sparkling water.
Thank you. The lemon lime has a weird flavor.
Yeah. For all the brands. I don't like any lemon lime flavored sparkling water. I don't know what it is. Yeah, it just tastes like, no, I don't want to drink sour water. No, thank you. No. Why would I want that? No, I'm good. Thanks. Thanks for making it, but no.
I gotcha.
Yeah. All right, everybody. On that note, that'll do it for this edition of Hit and Season. Just folks, again, if you are watching this podcast on the WHYY YouTube channel, thank you for subscribing. Hello, everybody. Would encourage, if you want to tell other folks about that, WHYY YouTube channel, subscribe, and you'll get all of the Roundtable Hit and Season podcast episodes. And of course, if you're an audio person, we're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it is you get your podcast. Tell friends and family members about Hit and Season. We'll take you through the season together. If you're on Apple, leave a 5-star rating and a review. We'd love to hear what you think about the show, and it does help the podcast grow. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time right here on Hit and Season.